to talk about circles of influence and just the places that God's given you and I influence. And we talked about that just a second ago as we prayed. But really with Labor Day weekend, what we talk about and think about is work, right? And so when we talk about work and think about work, there's probably a lot of thoughts that come to your mind. It's probably somewhere on the spectrum, whether you love work or hate work, whether you're a student and go, I don't work right now, or you're retired and you say, well, I don't work either. But there's wherever you're at on this spectrum this morning, there's likely some way you feel about work. And typically, probably when I say something about work, either one of two things probably pops in your mind. One is about the place you work or the job that you do. Two is probably the people that you work with, right? And if we're just thinking about that, this idea of work and the workplace, as you think through that, there's probably things that you wish you could say, but you can't. Let me dive a little bit further in that. Like, for example, if you're thinking about people that you work with, like maybe you've got a person in your office that you work with or wherever you work or students or that you go to school with, or retirees, maybe it's somewhere you volunteer or a place that you frequent pretty often during the day. But there's probably someone who carries their thoughts out just a little bit too long, right? Like, and here's the deal, like I can't talk too much about this because I'm probably guilty of this more often than not. But there's someone that just talks and talks and talks and you probably wish you could say, but you can't. Like, does your train of thought have a caboose? Again, like I'm probably guilty of that. Or like maybe there's someone that you just like, and maybe you're just not a people person, right? Like you just would love to work by yourself. Sorry, my voice is, you got to bear with me a little bit. I'm not sick, but I yelled a lot last night at an A&M football game. So I'm hoping to make it through here. But maybe there's people in your life too that you would just really don't like to be surrounded by people, or there's somebody who annoys you. And so for you, it's like, man, maybe when you think about that person, you're just like, man, if I throw a stick at you, would you leave? Like something that you want to say, but you can't. Another person, maybe, again, you don't like people. Hopefully, not all of these are not true of you. If so, we probably need to have a different conversation after. But like maybe there's another person that just is always like on the trend setting for fashion, and you're like, whatever look you were going for, you missed. That's Or maybe even like Michael Scott from The Office, you may wish you could say, if you just feel kind of not real happy about the place you work, man, I should have burned this place down when I had the chance. Don't do that. But maybe you would say, like Michael Scott, I'm running away from my responsibilities and it feels good. Maybe you've just been swamped in this season. Whatever the case is, though, likely there's someone that pops into your mind when you think about this. But here's the deal, and this is the not as funny part. You likely pop into someone else's mind too, right? Like, I realize that. Like, there's probably some of those that were very true of me and real feelings people have for me, and I just have to deal with that. But that's not as funny. It's not something we like to think about as much. But here's the deal. In our circle of relationship, in our circle of influence at our workplaces or where you spend your working hours, there's thoughts. There's thoughts that people have about you, about who you are or what kind of worker you are, about how you work or what you do or what you say or how you respond. And then there's also feelings about our workplaces, whether you like it or not. Again, like we're all probably somewhere on this spectrum of where we fit into this work deal, but typically, just in our culture, work carries a negative connotation. Work carries baggage. Work is not fulfilling. It's draining. Work is hard. Work is tough. It's not something that we like. And it's our culture, it's prevalent in that, or it's apparent through different things like Thank God It's Friday, the saying TGIF, songs like Everybody's Working for the Weekends. And so there's this kind of love-hate that we can have as far as relationship with work at a time. But there's the other truth is you spend a large portion of your life at work. Wherever it may be, you spend a large portion of your life doing something during working hours. Average American will spend about a third of their lives working, 90,000 hours or more. So just think about that for a second. Like this is a huge chunk of what we do, and typically we define work as this 8-to-5 job, the working hours of our life. And so the question that I want to ask you this morning, and I think we all need to deal with this morning when we think about our circle of influence at work, is how are you using your working hours? How are you using your working hours? A third of your life, 90,000 hours of your life, how are you using those? How are you using those? Students, those in the workforce, those who are retired, how are you using that time? But I think before we really get into answering that question, we've got to understand work as God intended it. Why did God create work? Because he did create it. And hopefully I haven't raised your blood pressure too much. Maybe like, you know, those five things are true of you and you're just like, man, why are we talking about this? This is crazy. But when we think about work, God created and designed work. He actually works. And here's another thing. We will likely work in heaven. Man, some of you are just like, that was not the news I wanted to hear this morning. This was not why I came to church. Like, I did not want to hear that. But here's the deal. Like, before, again, we talk and think in our own view of work, let's talk about what God did and how he designed it. I want to begin in Genesis chapter 2, the very beginning of the Bible. So if you've got your Bibles, go ahead and turn there. It's the first book in Genesis 2. If you don't have a Bible, you can pick up one. I'm going to kind of be all over the place a little bit this morning. So words will be on the screen. We're going to bounce around a little bit. But Genesis is right at the beginning of the Bible, and we're actually picking up right after God had finished his creation of the world, and he put a man in the garden. Eve, the first woman, wasn't created yet. But what we see in Genesis 2:15 is this: the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and take care of it. So right off the bat, we see two things that God did, that God gave the man to do. He didn't ask Adam, like, hey, do you want to work? You need a job? Like, here you go. He said, and what he did is God designed it from the beginning. God took Adam and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and take care of it. If you want to underline things, those words may be good for you to underline: work and take care of. And I think it's important that we see both of those words, because I think we can see work and think about the tasks that you and I have each day, but I think we also can miss a lot the take care of it piece. Like, out of Adam's work, God was designed for it to benefit and help others. Benefit and help creation at this point, but ultimately to benefit and help others. And so out of our work, there was something that we were taking care of and helping out of that. And this was good. This was perfect. The understanding of that, and I want to talk about a little bit what that was before, but we see a stark change from that just a chapter later when sin entered the world. And sin is our disobedience to God's instructions or commands. So when we sin, things became broken. Things were not as they were designed, including work. Look at Genesis chapter 3, verse 17. Cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil, you will eat food from it. Painful toil. Painful work. It's going to be hard. You will eat food from it all the days of your life. It will produce thorns and thistles for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your brow, you will eat your food until you return to the ground, since from it you were taken. For dust you are, and to dust you will return. And so what we see in here is a very different picture than what we just read a chapter before. Like, what happened? Well, sin broke this, and so now what we see is work was now going to be harder, and God's original design and purpose for it was broken. It was messed up. It wasn't right, and so we are experiencing that broken perspective of work now in our own lives. It's why we may consider work draining or meaningless. It's why we may see work as just part of a system, just a way for that we kind of have to play the game, and here's the deal. It wasn't meant to be this way. I remember I think ESPN did a show, 30 for 30 maybe, where it was like, what if I told you, have y'all heard this, or am I just the only crazy one? I may be the only crazy one, but it's like, what if I told you something, and they were like setting up a story in sports that was just different than what you would typically see it or think about it as, and so I just think that, I hear that in my head, like, what if I told you work really wasn't the way that you see it, wasn't meant to be the way that you see it, and that's the case. Like, I think about this, and as I was writing this week, I thought about all the time I spent with my grandparents growing up. So really, from the point that I was 6 weeks old until I went to preschool, every afternoon I spent with my grandparents after I got out of preschool. So from 12 to 4 or 5 until my parents got off work, that's where I was at, and I loved it. I mean, it was something that I just really enjoyed. And really, as I think about that in that time, like, I've got a 3-year-old and an 8-month-old, and it's like two Energizer bunnies kind of right now, just like bouncing all over the place. And so there's things that I do to try to keep them occupied. Like, if I can just keep them occupied a little bit. And the more and more, like, I'm in this stage, the more and more I'm trying to do this, I'm realizing just how genius my grandpa was at keeping us busy with stuff. pretty much meaningless stuff as when we were younger. And so what he would do, two things that I remember vividly us doing as kids, is he would give us a hacksaw to cut up pecan limbs out of the yard, which if you've ever cut wood with a hacksaw, you can try it this afternoon. Let me know how it goes. But it's going to take you a while, okay? That's not how a hacksaw was designed to do. It was designed to cut metal, not wood, and it doesn't do a very good job of cutting wood. And so I remember, as a kid, us taking these branches, and my brothers, one would hold one side, one would hold the other, and the one would be sawing. There were three of us, and it was just it would take us forever to cut a stick. And finally, we would cut it, and it's yes, okay, this is good. Eventually, we just started breaking them, because it's this is terrible. This is not working right. He would also give us these big 10-inch nails, and he would just get us to hammer them into the ground and then pull them out. And so we would pull it out and then find another spot in the dirt, hammer it in again and pull it out. And it's that's genius. And so these things that they were doing, and it's funny because I actually did this to my son a couple weeks ago. I just gave him a block of wood and a hacksaw. I was here, cut this. Okay. He's not really going to do it, but he is loving doing this. And really that was fun for us until we realized this was not the best way that this was intended to do. I remember the first day that my grandpa pulled out loppers and wood saws. It's why didn't you tell us about this? And I'm sure I didn't say that, but in my head, it's just what? This is so much better and easier and good. And so when we began to hammer nails into wood and build things, and so my point in sharing you this story is, for us as kids, we just had this kind of broken perspective of what these tools were designed for. We were cutting wood with a hacksaw, hammering nails into dirt, and it didn't really mean anything. It didn't really amount to anything, or it was a lot harder than what it really should have been. And as a culture, this is kind of where we are on work. It's something we do, but a lot of the times I think because of the brokenness of our sin, the impact of our sin, we don't necessarily see it or have this understanding of it completely. And the reality is we're looking through a chipped or a broken windshield. You know what's crazy when I think about chipped or broken windshields? For the first probably 10 years I was driving, I never had a rock hit my windshield. It's just never happened to me. And I think the last 2 years, it's every rock that's on the road will hit my car at some point. I don't know what it is about me, but it's just crazy. Seriously, there's both cars that I drive on a typical basis have broken windshields and multiple chips in them. There's cracks or chips or whatever the case may be. And it's just to the point where I don't want to replace it because I just know in a couple of weeks another rock's going to hit my windshield. I just kind of want to wait, get a little bit more use out of this thing. And so my truck is got a couple spots. They're not big. Don't be concerned for your life in the parking lot. I'm not going to run over you. But there's a couple spots in the driver's side of the windshield that probably will grow and need to be replaced here pretty soon. But I had to get it inspected this week, and I was and I've got a love-hate relationship with my truck right now. The check engine light turns on for a week, and then it turns off. So it was off this week. I just got to get it inspected before it comes back on again. And so I took it to go get it inspected. And when I did, the guy said, hey, next year, you're probably going to just need to know. It's not going to pass inspection with these cracks. Okay, gotcha. And the bottom line is, it won't pass inspection because the cracks in the windshield make my view unclear. Though it seems small now and a little bit not really that impactful on my driving, it makes it unclear. And the reality is that these rocks and these brokenness, the brokenness of our sin has put these chips. It's thrown rocks in our windshield and there's chips in it and we're not seeing a clear picture. We aren't seeing clearly in the way that God intended us to do it. And that's about all things, but specifically what we're talking about work this morning. When we talk about where we spend a third of our life, over 90,000 hours, and we talk about work and the circle of influence is, the reality is what God intended, we don't necessarily see. And most of the time, it's because we're not trying to. God allows us to have a clear view of that. But at the same time, because we're still broken, because we still have sin, we don't always see it the way that God intended. And so I want to talk about two things. What does work represent, and then how do we get intentional with that time? And so first, what does work in the Bible represent? And I think first off, when we think about work and the Bible, we've got to understand that God's definition of work and our definition of work are probably two different things. We typically think about work, as our job. That's primarily what we would say when you said, where do you work or what do you do? You're going to list your job for the most part. And maybe you think about other things, tasks that you do at home, like laundry that you don't like, or cooking or mowing or cleaning. Some of you may like those things, but you think about the tasks that you don't like. And that's typically what you would compartmentalize work as. But in the Bible, really, when we go back to that initial description and introduction of work in Genesis 2, what we see is it's a lot more holistic than really what we view work as. And so God would call work and define work as more than just our job. It's the parenting that you do. It's the hobbies that you do. It's how you spend time with people and family and friends. It's all of these aspects of your life that are work. And out of our work, we're supposed to work, but also we're supposed to take care of things. But still, even with that understanding, there's maybe a little bit of tension. Like, okay, well, what does work mean? And what am I supposed to be getting out of my work? And so really, when we think about work, we typically talk about the job. And so that's really what I want to focus on. But when we look at the biblical definition of work, what we see is work does a few things for us. First is that work brings fulfillment. So God designed us as human beings to have purpose and meaning, to crave that, to want to have purpose and meaning with our life. We don't want to do meaningful stuff. We don't want to do this. And that gives us some identity in a sense. And this can be taken out of context. Like at times our brokenness can see work as just unfulfilling and draining and all of that. And our view is that way. Our brokenness can also have an impact on this too, as far as the identity piece of it, because we can become so wrapped up in our job that's pretty much all we think about. That's all we do, and we find too much purpose and meaning from that in our brokenness. And I think we see this around us. Like typically when I meet someone, and I'm guilty of this too, and this is just kind of part of our culture, when you meet someone, typically what's the first question you ask them? What do you do? Where do you work? Right? Like that's how we define identity and meaning, when really that doesn't tell the whole story even close, right? It tells a lot about you, but it doesn't tell the whole story. And so when we think about this, we see that work brings fulfillment in the Bible, and that was God's intention behind it. But we've got to realize that our brokenness can kind of skew how we see this. Other thing that work was designed for is to keep us from idleness or laziness. Laziness is a broken aspect of this, but to keep us from idleness. And this is hurtful. Why? Because it can rob us, again, of the purpose and meaning that God created us to have in work. And so we, from the broken perspective of this, if we are idle, if we do have time, if we're not doing things, then that can hurt us because it can rob us of purpose and meaning and fulfillment that God created work to do. I mean, that's where we're going to find fulfillment and purpose and meaning from our jobs in heaven. I'm excited to experience that. But then on the flip side of that too, the brokenness of this, like it can either cause us to, because of how we view work and the nature of it, to pull away and withdraw and remove ourselves from that. Or it can also, in the brokenness of it, contribute to our busyness. Because we can get so wrapped up in the work that we're doing and the things that we're doing that we don't have time to stop and slow down, and it robs our lives of just the rest that we need. Listen to this in Proverbs 13:4, a sluggard's appetite is never filled, but the desires of the diligent are fully satisfied. And I think this communicates these two points, that work was about fulfillment. But if we're talking about work and thinking about the biblical purpose for work, here's what I really want you to catch. Like, those things are good to know. I think we get those. But here's the thing I think we miss the most, is that God gives us work not only for the ability for us to provide for ourselves. He gives us this gift to be able to provide for ourselves, but also to help others. Like, our work should be helping others. Like, that's why God's given it to us. Look at this in Ephesians 4:28. Anyone who's been stealing must steal no longer, but must work, doing something useful with their own hands. Listen to this line, that they may have something to share with those in need. Why do we work? Not only does God give us that ability to help sustain ourselves, but it's also a gift to be able to support and help others. Not only financially, but I think with care and support and just love that we have as Christ followers that we can give to other people. And this really is what I think has been missing in our aspect of work. Again, I'm speaking to more of those, more than those of you in the workforce, students. Like that you were at school not only to learn something, but to help and love on others. There's a purpose there. There's a bigger purpose behind this picture. Retirees, you are not only there to retire and rest, and those are all good things in this sense, but you are also here to help others and to serve others with your time. And when we think about work, again, we think about our job only, and that's what we want to focus on, but go broader in that. But really, let's move back to the question, how are you using your working hours? As a Christ follower, right now, in this season, how are you using your working hours? And I would urge you this morning to be intentional with the circle of influence that you have at your workplace. And I think the biggest thing to understand in this deal of why should we be intentional in our workplace? Why? Go to Ephesians 5, and this is one of the ones we'll camp out on a little bit. Ephesians 5, verse 15 and 16. Be very careful then how you live. This is written by a man named Paul. Paul is writing to the church in Ephesus. He was an early church leader, and he's writing to the church in Ephesus. There's a lot of distractions and just kind of chaos going on in the world around them. And Paul is talking right before this about just the things that they can do that are not good, not right, not consistent with what God's called us to as Christ followers. But he says this, be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise. Making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. And I really want to catch that last segment in verse 16, making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. So why? Live with intentionality. Why? Because the days are evil. What does that mean? Well, it's an urgency that this writer, Paul, is writing to communicate to this church about the state of being that we exist in, that we live in. He's not necessarily saying there's people in the world that are evil, and so you need to be careful of those evil people. What he's saying is these days are evil. He's talking about this world around us is broken. What Paul is saying is, hey, church in Ephesians, there's people around you looking through broken windshields. And so you've got to be intentional about your lives and what you do in the time that you've got here. Why? Again, there's people looking around through broken windshields. And so when we go back to that question, that's the why. But when we go back to that question, what does it look like to spend our time wisely, to be intentional? First, be an asset, not a liability. Be an asset, not a liability. What do I mean by that? An asset is someone that adds to the company or adds to the place, adds to the classroom. Students, when you are one that models, what a good student looks like and get your grades done or get your papers done on time and these other things that happen, these deadlines that you have, when you do that, you're being an asset because a liability is something that costs or takes. And so when we think about this, as Christ followers, how can we be intentional? We can be intentional by being an asset, not a liability. Someone that gives value, being an asset is an employee that trusts, that has trust, is trustworthy, and holds value in their workplace. And since you're a Christ follower, what this is saying and what we see is that you should be the best employee based on how you work and what you do at work, at school, in the time that you spend in your working hours. Listen to this in Colossians 3. If you got your Bibles, you can turn there. Colossians 3, 22 through 24. Slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything. And do it not only when their eye is on you and to curry their favor, but with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord. Don't just do this because you're trying to get a raise or make them pay you more, whatever the case is. I want to talk about that first word real quick. Slaves, really this is defining something that we don't have as good of an understanding on because of our understanding of the transatlantic slave trade. Man, words are hard. Slave trading. And so because we understand that, we view slavery as different than what this is communicating. This word in some translations of the Bible is used, it's a word that is bondservant. And bondservant or slave is basically a person here that's hired to work for a certain period of time. In that day, you would work for something or someone to pay off a loan potentially. You would work for someone if you wanted a stable job, to have a place to live. It was a slave or a bondservant was someone who worked willingly and put themselves willingly under someone else's leadership to work for a period of time. It was more like a contract worker. And so really, we can put ourselves here. So slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything. Do what they say, and do it not only when their eyes on you to curry their favor, but with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord. In verse 22, we get this initially, like, because of who God is and because of how you view him, work for your bosses well. And you likely have a boss. This includes most of us. You likely have a boss you work for, and it may be a good boss or a bad boss, but either way, you're called to work hard. Why? Not because of the love you have for your boss, but because of the love you have for God. And it speaks to masters, too, in this. Colossians 4:1, masters, provide your slaves with what is right and fair, because you know that also you have a master in heaven. So jump a little bit ahead of there. So he's including everybody in this. Masters, slaves, those who work for people, and those who don't, use your influence to help others. And bosses, if you are the boss, do what's right and fair. But in both cases, we take these cues from God. Our work ethic and trustworthiness and service for others come from the way that we see God treat us. So are you reliable? Are you fair? Are you trustworthy? Does your employer know that they are getting your best? Can they trust you with getting things done? Verse 23 of Colossians chapter 3. Go back to that. It says, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for human masters. So work hard. Why? Because you're working like you're working for the Lord. And so work with all your heart, because it represents God. Work hard, be trustworthy, make things better for others, because it represents what God has done for us. And again, it's important to understand this with the biblical perspective of work. And so the question I have for you this morning is, are you just going through the motions and maintaining the minimum, or are you working hard? Which describes you? And this is where we got to remember, kind of when we talk about the original intention for work, is to keep us from idleness. And if you're just maintaining the minimum, you're in a position where you're maintaining idleness, and idleness robs purpose, meaning, and fulfillment of work. And so if you have a bad view of work, I'm just going to be honest, and I think we've got to be honest this morning. I would just ask you, are you giving it your all? Not because your employer is so good, but why? Because you're working with all your heart. Why? As for the Lord, not for human masters. And we really need purpose. Like, you can see this in young kids. Again, my son is 3, and there's times where he will come out in the garage with me, and if I'm working on something, he loves to take my wrenches and go tighten and loosen stuff. And before, it was like I could just tell him to do something that I knew he couldn't mess up, you know, like loosen or tighten. It's like, hey, mess with that. He's happy to do it, and it'll be for minutes. But he's realized now, like, that some of the things I was giving him were meaningless tasks. Like, he's at the point where I was when I was like, no, Papa, I need the wood saw, and the lopper is not the hacksaw. And so there's times where, like, I'll give him a wrench and tell him to, like, go tighten on something that's a rivet or something that's not going to loosen or tighten. And he's just like, nah, Dad, that doesn't work. I'm like, okay. And he's starting to get wrenches on there and loosen stuff down. So I got to be a little bit more careful. But he wants to have purpose and meaning and impact. This is a desire that God's given us. It's not something we've put into him at this point. It's something that he wants to do, because it's a God-given desire. And so are you working with all your heart, or are you just going through the motions? Are you an asset or a liability? Are you giving it your all? And the end of verse 24 communicates our motivation for serving. Why? Because it is the Lord Christ you're serving. And so work hard, serve others, love and help others well. Why? Because through it you're serving God himself. And I really think this is a key part of where we miss a lot, and kind of our brokenness and our broken perspective of work. Why? Because I think a lot of times we view work as about us. It's about my career, my job, my promotion, my salary. Again, all those are good things. God gives us this gift to provide for ourselves. Don't feel bad about those things, but in that, realize that your work is not only about you. It's not only about providing for your family. It's about providing for and helping others, not only financially through what you earn, but also in how you lead and love and serve. And so why has God given you your work? To work and take care of, to be a help for others. And so now let's go back to this question of how do we be intentional with our time? How are you using your time? And I think we've got to understand the why. Go back to Ephesians 5, 15 through 16. Be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity. Be intentional about the days that you spend in work. Be intentional about the 90,000 hours that you're going to spend in your life working. Wherever you are on that. The reality is some of us have more than others. Some of us have less than others. And so in the time that you spend in work, when we ask this question, how are you spending your working hours as a student, as someone in the workforce, as a retiree, how are you spending these hours? Be intentional. Why? Because the days are evil. Because the days are evil. And so because God designed work and his purpose to keep you from idleness and give you purpose, meaning, and fulfillment, should you experience those things? Absolutely. Because you should be the best employee that you have since that your company has since you're a Christ follower. Yes. Like, we should be trusted assets. All these things are good. But the main reason that we see of why we're intentional with the time that we spend at work is what we see in verse 16, because the days are evil. And the reality that the people around us, the people in your circle of influence, that you have influence over, that I don't necessarily have influence over. Like, we all have different people in our circles, but it's because of the reality that they're looking through a broken windshield. And we have the ability to see clearly and to give them the ability to see clearly. And so why are you intentional with your time? Why are you intentional with your days? Why are you intentional with opportunities? Because there are people looking through a broken windshield. And when you think through that and you're thinking about how you can lead and guide others, you're living a life that's deployed. It's something we've talked about. You're taking next steps with God, but you're guiding others to take next steps with God. As a church, we're committed to helping you do this. But as a Christ follower, you and I should be doing this. And so I want to ask you that question one more time. How are you using your working hours? The time you spend at school, at work, as a retiree, whatever else you're doing, how are you using the working hours of your life? Is it just to provide a salary, to benefit yourself, to do these things? Again, all those things are good. Or is it also to leverage the influence and the responsibility you've been given to not only help yourself, but to help others, to point others to Christ, to lead others to Christ? As we think about work and as we look at what that means, God's given us work not only for ourselves, but to benefit and help others. So let's be about that this week. Let's pray. God, I just come now, and God, I'm grateful for the work that you've given each of us. God, and whatever we may feel about that or however we may feel, maybe we would really, really feel and say that we're in a place that's pretty negative. It's pretty hard, and we really don't like a lot of the things. And God, I pray that you would just help those in that situation. That as they would see these things, God, that you just help to evaluate our hearts. And God, I pray also for those who are in a pretty good place, maybe, but they're just not as intentional as you would call them to be. God, be with those too. God, be with all of us this week, wherever we are on the spectrum, to see the things that we need to see, to understand a little bit more about how you've designed us and created us and given us the responsibility and the role and the task of working. But God, I also pray that we wouldn't forget the last part. We'd realize there's people looking around through broken windshields, that you've given us the work, the things that we do, not only to pay the bills, but the things that we do for fun. You've given us those things to be intentional with, to share others, share with others you, but also to point them to you. And so, God, I just pray we'd be about that, and that we would see fruit in our lives as a result, that we would continue to see next steps being taken as a result of the influence that you've given each of us. So, God, we love you and we trust you. In your name we pray. Amen.